Oh, how nostalgic I feel when I think about Friends. Who wouldn't want a flatmate like Chandler? Or to walk into Monica's house without knocking and grabbing food from the fridge? Or to stumble upon Rachel and Phoebe spying on Ross?
Hello? Who are we spying on?
Friends is the group of friends we'd all like to have. They're caring, loyal, and alike, but strangely the same. And above all, always together. But wait a minute. The last episode was filmed 20 years ago. Back then, there were no smartphones, no social networks, let alone generative AI. And remember your internet modem, which made the same noise as Phoebe imitating Ross playing the bagpipes.
1, 2, 3, 4!
Imagine them in this day and age. Do you really think Joey's gang would have been this united today? One has to wonder, how much have these new technologies transformed human relationships? Make sense? Make sense. Welcome to Make Sense, a leap in pop culture to explore societal challenges. A podcast from Skimmer Business School. To find out, I'm reaching out to the Monica of Research, Patricia Rossi. Hailing from Brazil, she is an associate professor of marketing at Skimmer Business School and has conducted research on consumer behavior, innovation, and new technologies. Here she is, stepping into our flat. Hello, Patricia.
Hi, Mary.
For our podcast today, I have decided to dedicate one question to each of the Friends characters, but I'd like to begin by asking you, who is your favorite Friends character?
That's a tough question. That's really, really a difficult question. I think it depends on the day. Today, I just heard a nice joke, so I think I would go with Chandler.
Okay, let's begin with Chandler. So, Chandler is the one who entertains. He's the funny guy. He likes to make jokes. He likes to make his friends laugh. But if I think about today and the fact that we seem to be more entertained by technology than by people, I'm wondering how Chandler would fare in today's society. Would we actually be laughing at Chandler's jokes? Would we be entertained by him, and would we find him funny?
That's a nice question, actually. I think that he would have a lot of challenges to overcome, but he would also have a lot of opportunities to grasp. For example, if you start with the challenges, and if you think about Chandler having to entertain his friends while in the Monica's living room, let's say, he would have to deal with what research has been calling the absent-present paradox, right? So this research found that this paradox relates to something that you are there, but you are not really present in the conversation. You are not really present. You are together alone, let's say. So this is something that he would have to come up a way to overcome. He would also probably have to find a way to overcome being fobbed, right? Have you heard about it?
Not at all.
So being fobbed, it's a new word. It has been developed after the McCann agency. It means phone snobbing. So you are being ignored by someone that is using the phone while in your company, right? So this is something he would have to find a way to overcome, perhaps, find new ways to call their attention while they're using their phone together. But at the same time, I can see lots of opportunities for Chandler, right? So if you think about the newer generations, right now, we spend more or less, on average, 7 hours per day, like screen time, 7 hours per day, it's a lot. Out of which, 3 hours per day on social media. Right. So I can see Chandler developing a lot of comedies or sessions of question and answers, having live shows, these kind of things, finding ways to post his jokes, always with this witty humor, you know. He would have such a great audience, I think.
So let's move on to Phoebe. Phoebe is the one who's always involved in a cause. She's the activist. She really cares about people, animals, the environment. She cares about sustainable consumption. So if we had to put her in today's context, how peaceful of an activist would Phoebe be? Would she become a bit more war-oriented in her activism? And how would her activism be displayed today?
If Friends were filmed today, I think we would certainly see a lot more activism, a lot of social causes, environmental causes, more pro-diversity, this kind of things. We would see definitely Phoebe being perhaps more engaged and, of course, using other tools to show the engagement, right? So she would have her social media accounts to share educational content, for example, to support specific causes like animal rights, sustainable consumption, slow fashion, in a more private context, not really like public social media-wise, but in a more private context, I can see Phoebe interacting with her friends, trying to educate them, you know, to bring to the table conversations about eco-consumption or to find renewable sources of energy, right? I can see this happens. And in my mind, while the others may not be so passionate and so enthusiastic about all these causes, I don't think Phoebe would be at war with any of them. Although we can see in many papers, for example, there is a lot of research showing that we can see more aggressive behavior on social media when you are actually defending a cause or showing a political positioning, right? This triggers a lot of aggressive behavior that can be extrapolated to offline relations, triggering a lot of stress, a lot of conflict. So there's papers showing that like romantic relationships have ended, right? Couples have broken up because of that. And what happened is whenever you see, according to the results of this research, is whenever you see a social media post, you just see one side of the person, right? You're flattening the person, but somehow you forget that there's much more, that the person is so complex. And this has created a lot of conflicts, a lot of stress in many families, in among many friends, right? So this culture of blocking, canceling, you know, the culture of, for example, unfollowing, this can extrapolate to outside relationships, outside of social media, to the offline. And of course, this triggers a lot of stress.
So let's focus on Joey. So Joey is the one who has a lot of charm, and he uses his charm to win people over. We also know Joey as the person who is in B-movie actor. He's a B-movie actor, and he also is quite successful with the ladies. I can totally picture Joey in this day and age, and I can see him posting pictures of himself and his muscles and his good looks, and also trying to promote his movies online, and spending quite a lot of time on social media and also getting quite riled up about likes and comments and so forth. So my question is, how much time would Joey actually have spent with his friends face-to-face, or would he actually be online so much taking care of his image that he wouldn't be spending so much time with them?
Yeah, I can also see Joey sitting down in Monica's couch, you know, just rolling his phone. So I think that similarly to what we discussed, in the case of Chandler, he would have to deal with this absent-present paradox, right? But also, he would have to deal with what research has identified as this freeing-slaving paradox, right? So there is this paper that mentions this paradox, and the idea is, at some point, You are free because you can communicate with people everywhere. You can have access to entertainment. You can have access to information that 20 years ago you cannot possibly imagine to have, right? At the same time, you are enslaved by this tiny smartphone in your hand, right? Because you were focused on that all the time. You don't pay attention to other things. You have this, you know, the sound, the message sound, you know, it keeps chiming. And then you have to go back and check what is going on all the time. So this urgency that we have to not miss anything, to be up to date with everything, with everybody, everywhere, it triggers what research has identified as the fear of missing out, right? Or the FOMO, the famous FOMO. right? So the FOMO thing is this perception that other people are living a better life, a fun life, experiences, except that what you see on social media is just like one picture of the whole year of that person, right? It's not the real thing. But numerous studies have identified that this fear of missing out can trigger negative consequences on self-esteem, for example. It triggers anxiety, it triggers stress, and at some point it can trigger depression. But it's not always negative. I can also see, for example, Joey spending time with his friends and perhaps even using the technology to connect with his friends. Technology has also a positive side, right? So I can imagine them, for example, having a group on WhatsApp, you know, where they share funny stuff, where they share, do you want to grab a bite? Where can we go? And then everybody, you know, gives their 5 cents on where we can go, what can we do, or just wanted to hang out, something like this. They wouldn't need to come to each other's place to say, let's go to Central Park. They would send a message to say, let's go to Central Park, right? So they would have this WhatsApp group to share also struggles, why not? I can imagine, for example, that they would have 2 groups, let's say, one full group with 6 of them, and perhaps another one that is only the boys, and another one that's only the girls. And if you have only the boys, I can see another episode that Chandler got stuck in an ATM vestibule with a Victoria's Secret model. Remember this? Suddenly there is a blackout. I mean, he doesn't know what to do. And then she has a phone, but he doesn't. So he asks, okay, can I borrow your phone? He calls everybody. He says, okay, I'm with Jill Goodacre. What do I do? He would probably send a picture saying, guess what? They would have lots of conversations about that, you know. Perhaps he would even miss to meet her because he would just be chatting with his friend. But I see that, yes, technology can also bring people together, right? And of course, in the end, he would post a picture with her, you know, in every possible social media that he has. He would have collected lots of likes and thumbs up and everything from his friends and his followers. Unagi.
Now let's take a look at Rachel. So Rachel is the one who is the fashionista. She puts fashion and style above, and beauty above everything else. And she's really into brands and she's consumption oriented. She knows designers and she loves shopping and getting a good deal. So I'm thinking about the friendship between the environmentally conscious Phoebe and Rachel, who wears leather jackets and who tends to be consumption-oriented. How would their friendship play out today? Would Rachel become more into sustainable marketing, for example?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely Rachel would be an influencer. She would leverage all her knowledge, all her experience into creating content for her followers about fashion trends, about events, about brands and designers, right? But I think the question here is, what kind of influencer would she be? Would she be a micro influencer or a macro influencer? Because this has implications on how she behaves and how she can actually influence her followers in social media, right? So if you are a micro influencer, normally you are perceived as more persuasive because you are seen as more authentic, right? But there's one thing. This only works when we are talking about hedonic products. So this research found that micro influencers, they can be perceived as more authentic and be more persuasive when they're talking about hedonic products. Hedonic products would be those that are related with pleasure, with fun, excitement. So in this case, because Rachel is talking about fashion and fashion is related with more hedonism, then yes, she could be perceived as more authentic and more persuasive, right? At the same time, there is another research that shows that micro influencers, they are perceived as more trustworthy if they use high arousal language. So this paper in Journal of Marketing shows that only those who are micro influencers, they can have positive results if they say, for example, oh my God, this is an amazing dress, something like this, right? She could use this kind of language in her post if she was a micro influencer, but it doesn't work if she was a macro influencer. Then they would expect a more like professional, perhaps, kind of language, a more less arousal kind of language, right? About the second question, whether she could be friends with Phoebe. I think yes, because Phoebe has this empathetic nature. I mean, she can accept other beliefs. And this makes me think about that episode when the one that they're living together, Rachel and Phoebe. And then, of course, Rachel would buy furniture at Pottery Barn, right? But Phoebe doesn't like this kind of brands. That's what happens that is wrong in the role. That's what she says, right? So to convince Phoebe to actually have this kind of furniture at home, Rachel says it's from a flea market, right? At some point, they reach an agreement on what they're going to do about the furniture. But again, yes, they remain friends despite the differences in how they see consumption, in their beliefs, in everything, right? And if we go back to the influencer thing, I think Rachel would become more environmentally conscious. I don't know if it would be because of Phoebe's activism or whether it would be because she wants to look good for her followers. But I see Rachel being more politically correct, you know, supporting environmental causes, perhaps even being an endorser of a slow fashion kind of brand.
So let's now take a look at Monica. So Monica is the one that always wants to do things better than everyone else. Monica is a perfectionist. She's a clean freak. She's an organizational freak. And she goes so far as to confront a food critic who's written some bad reviews about her in a newspaper. Well, not about her, but about her culinary skills. So I'm transposing this to our, you know, transparent online world today, and things like The Fork and TripAdvisor and how we critique restaurants and food, and Monica's obsession with customer satisfaction. I mean, how would she cope with customer satisfaction and all of this being online now?
I could see, like with Chandler, many opportunities but also many challenges for her. Right? For example, in my mind, I think that Monica would always expect a perfect review. And she's not completely wrong about that. We found in research a correlation between positive reviews, for example, and revenues from restaurants, or you could have positive correlation and perhaps even causation between positive reviews and consumer attitudes. What is interesting is that perfection is not always good. She could have positive results with negative reviews too, because it makes it look more real, right? This is what a research published in JCR called the blemishing effect. So the blemishing effect is like when you add a minor negative description to a product, it changes the perception into something better that it would otherwise be if the negative description was not there, right? Obviously, it doesn't happen for everything. There are some conditions that they need to be respected. So, for example, when you have a minor negative review, when the negative review comes after the positive description, and when you have low effort, low processing effort, then it triggers the positive results. It will have to be a review something like, oh my God, the food is delicious, the drinks are perfect, the place is absolutely cleaning, but the folded napkin is in a weird way, right? So it's something completely secondary. Also, I see that with this proliferation of online reviews, she could actually have her desire for perfection being even heightened, let's say, right? This could be a little challenging. She would constantly monitor all the reviews, you know, she would go there to respond immediately, you know, it's like she needs this flawless reputation. This could bring some negative psychological consequences. And as research has shown, when you are so focused on what people are telling to others about you, what people think, it can lead to a burnout syndrome, right? At the same time, as I like to see the bright side of things, she could also leverage social media to bring more people to her restaurant. You know, she could, for example, share pictures. She could share short videos about the background of the restaurant, like the backstage of how she's cooking, what is coming next, what is the menu, something like this. She could even create her own brand. I'm not talking about the restaurant brand, but Monica Geller could be a brand by itself, right? And then, of course, as you can see in research, this would bring people from a lot of places to just come to New York and visit her restaurant to eat. Perhaps she would have an agenda like fully booked until 2 years from now, you know, something like this. At the same time, the fact that she's so successful that she has, for example, let's assume a Michelin star, this could be a positive thing. But at the same time, this could trigger some anxiety, some kind of pressure that we tend not to think about. And if you think about Monica and Chandler growing their family, because now they're parents of twins, perhaps at some point she would have to make a choice or to find a more balanced way to live her life, work and private life, you know. She doesn't need to be always the best one in everything.
And now for the question that everyone has been waiting for, the one about Ross and Rachel. So as Phoebe would say, Ross is the one that is Rachel's lobster, meaning that they were meant to be together. They spend, you know, a lot of time in the show breaking up, making up, etc. And if you had to put them into today's context with Tinder and whatnot, I mean, I'm wondering if they would ever even have met and if they would have ever ended up together.
That's a great question. And to be honest, I like to think that they would end up together because after all, they're each other's lobster, right? But I'm not really sure about it, right? So the dating dynamic has changed so much. If you think about friends, they have met through Monica offline, right? And it still happens, huh? It's not that it doesn't happen. But if you think about the new dating dynamic, if you think about the dating apps, no, I don't think they would be together because they wouldn't have a match. Normally, these dating apps, they're based on, for example, geographic location, some kind of personality traits and characteristics and interests that not necessarily would be the same for them. And I think in this case, most likely, Rachel would be dating Joey. So if you follow the logic of algorithm and that they keep always feeding you with the same things because you train AI, you train these algorithms, this is the website I visit, this is the news I read, this is the pages I like. So the AI, the algorithm keeps feeding you with more of the same, right? So even if it doesn't work with Joey, at the end of the day, she would be meeting another Joey-like and then another Joey-like. She would keep having more of the same. And this makes me think about a research that a co-author of mine, Mariani, and I, we developed about our autonomy to make choices when using algorithms, right? Perhaps Rachel would be so fed up with these algorithms feeding more Joey's and less Ross's that she would at some point try to put something very different, you know, as a personality trait or put something very unexpected so she would meet other people. What we found in this research is that as consumers, we want to keep our autonomy, right? It's okay to have help from AI, but we still want to keep our autonomy, even if it's a complex decision. So for example, when I'm talking about a complex decision, and dating could be a complex decision, right? When you think about a simple decision is when you have to make a choice based on three attributes, let's say size of package, color, and price. It's simple. But then if you think about a complex decision, when you have these three attributes plus other 20 attributes, it makes it very complicated, right? You need to put a lot of effort. Even so, you still want to keep your autonomy. So yes, I think that perhaps Rachel would try to keep her autonomy and find a way to meet Ross. Otherwise, she would always be getting more and more joys in her life.
So, Patricia, we have to end this podcast with a very essential question. Would all of the friends have been friends today?
Even if we can see differences in our society right now, the basic needs are still there, right? We are social beings. Even if we are using technology sometimes to reach that, we still need to be friends. So I think that at the end of the day, the series would still be something relevant with some changes, of course. But we always need to keep in mind that in the end of the day, they need to belong, they need to have friends, they need to have family, they need to love, they need to feel entertained, and they need to laugh, right? It will always be there.
What do you think could be Phoebe's favorite episode of Make Sense? Would it be the one about climate skepticism and Peter Pan? Or perhaps the one about Asterix and multiculturalism? And Chandler's? I'll leave you to search the list of Make Sense episodes, the podcast created by Skemmer Business School.